And I think if other people knew that good divorce, like just putting those two words together, was an option, we would pick that lane. And I'm not alone, Sarah. There is a pioneering movement right now. I'm referring to us as the Great Disruptors. And we are here to disrupt divorce as we know it.
Are you raising a family while also feeling like you're still growing up yourself? Do you wonder if you are getting it right? Welcome to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. She's a pediatrician and a mom, and she helps the whole family.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sarah Adams, a board-certified pediatrician, but I'm not your pediatrician. Feel free to use my podcast as helpful information, but in no way do I intend my podcast to replace the advice of your physician. Your physician knows you and is in the best position to provide medical advice. Welcome back to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah, the podcast that helps parents navigate the journey of building happy, healthy families. Today, we're talking about divorce, but not the doom and gloom version we've all seen in movies or maybe in our own lives. We're talking about a good divorce and how to achieve it if possible. Joining us today is someone who guides families through this common, though often painful, transition. Karen McNenny is a certified therapist and coach, and she helps couples avoid the debt, destruction, and despair that can often stem from divorce. Please welcome the good divorce coach, Karen. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to have a conversation with you, Sarah.
Before we get in too deep, and this is a deep topic, as you know, let's talk about the language. Maybe unsurprisingly, you advise against using the term broken home or broken family. Can you tell us more about that?
I think that there is a really negative narrative around divorce. And as a culture, we've all drunk the Kool-Aid, and we don't need to. These families aren't broken. Including my own. I'm 14 years post-divorce. Our kids were 5 and 6. They're now 19 and 20. So we've gone from kindergarten to college. And what I like to remind people is that your marriage might be ending, not your relationship. The marriage is ending, not the family. And when we do it well, that structure of family continues to thrive and survive through what I call the renovation of the family, not the destruction of it. We don't want to burn this sucker down and tear it down. We're going to just renovate and still be one family that lives across two homes. So that's one piece of language that I think we can really pay attention to. Then there's these subtle pieces like ex. You know, so often we have this negative, my ex this, my ex that. I always prefer to refer to the father of my children as my husband or my first husband, or just call him by his name like I would anyone else in my circle of community that I care about. And maybe one more little tidbit to think about in terms of language that folks are using. You know, there's been a long-standing tradition of mom's house, dad's house. I invite my clients to not use that language. It really connects to possessiveness, and it might sound like the kids then are a guest in mom's house or a guest in dad's house. So we name the homes. In our situation, we happen to live in a neighborhood, and every street has like a name of the children of the family who built this development. So there's Gilbert, and there's Rupert, and there's Lily, and there's Heather. So we use the name of the street. Other families have the yellow house and the blue house, or the Lakeview house and the mountain house, the Parkside house, and inviting the children, when age appropriate, to actually identify how they want to name their homes. And we move away from some of that old cultural vernacular that just continues to put these families on opposite sides of the story rather than in one shared story together.
And I love how you said that we have to really think about it in a different language. And right away, just hearing what you said inspires me to just use that own language in my practice as well. It sounds so much more positive and still welcoming. And it brings me to another question, and that is, have you heard the concept of nesting? I think the idea is that the divorced or separated parents move between two homes instead of moving the kids, meaning the kiddos stay put. What do you think of this practice for ensuring a better stability for the children?
Yeah, I have some comments about this. And really, I want to talk about the progression of the residential transition that happens in divorce. Now, when clients come to me, ideally, on a Sunday, they finally have given up the fight. We've done everything we can to save the marriage. And I say, great, now let's fight for a good divorce. And on that Monday, usually that couple's still living under one house and maybe hasn't even told their children. That's ideal for me because how we begin is often how we end. And the communication plan and the residential plan is where I like to start. And I always say, let's manage the family before the finances. We don't have to worry about the wagon wheel coffee table to invoke when Harry met Sally, but let's first stabilize the family. So a couple, a lot of times, is already living in different bedrooms of that house. Not letting the children know yet. That's not uncommon. So I might build for them what I call a cohabitation schedule. So once we talk to the kids and they're in the know, it gives opportunity. Like, we have to sell a house. We have to move to a house. We don't know where that house, it's the messy middle of the living situation. So can we give the parents a little bit of space? Which means we're gonna lay out a spreadsheet for the whole week. Who's doing breakfast? Who's doing packing the lunches? Who's dropping kids off? How about the after school schedule? Who's doing bedtime and dinner that night? So that those two parents who have now decided to divorce aren't in regular negotiations every day about what is the essential part of managing the household. The longer they stick in that negotiated, well, you were going to do the grocery shopping. Well, you're going to do the drop-off today. We just make it clear. Mm-hmm. The more points of contact they have, the greater opportunity for conflict. And as a divorce consultant, what I'm trying to do as their project manager and their communications director and their risk manager is to eliminate opportunities for conflict, because this is the basis for the divorce. And I'm here to protect their future, and I work for their children. Those are actually my clients. And I'm there to help their parents not do all the dumb stuff that's going to escalate conflict during the divorce process. So we might start with that residential cohabitation schedule. How can we create a little bit of space? Mom, you're out of the house Monday, Wednesday night. Don't care what you do, where you go, you're off duty. Dad on duty. Tuesday, Thursday mornings. Mom, those are your mornings. Dad, you can leave early for the gym. And we've decided as a team, they don't have to negotiate it. Now, this might lead to that next step, Sarah, that you identified, which is nesting. And again, are we going to sell this family home? Can someone afford it? We have to figure these financial pieces out before we really know. But we can no longer sustain living under the same roof. So that means it's no longer this cohabitation schedule, it's a nesting schedule. And you're right, the kids stay in the nest and the parents are the ones who leave and come and go. I'm working with a family right now, they're just taking the weekends to nest. So they cohabitate during the week, but then the weekend mom is gone. Now, is that to her mother's and father's house? Is it to a friend's couch? Is it to an Airbnb? Every family needs to decide that. More permanent nesting is when the families, and again, if they have the resources, mom and dad each have their own independent home or apartment or short-term rental, as the case may be, and the kids stay put. It's rare that a family can endure that long-term. And this is why, because you and I are married, Sarah, and you've been at the house for the week and I come back and the trash hasn't been taken out.
Oh, yes.
And the sheets haven't been washed and the laundry's piled up and the refrigerator is empty. So some couples are just not good roommates. in addition to a lot of other things. But that can lead to the conflict that ultimately led to the divorce. So if there is a couple that's going to nest long term, then we make roommate agreements, which is that when you're leaving the home, you're preparing that home as if an honored guest is coming.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm turning my bedroom over to my mother who's coming to visit. So I'm going to tidy up the house. I'm going to make sure the kids' rooms are tidy. I'm going to have all the right groceries. I'm going to switch over the sheets and towels in my room so that my mother can arrive. But instead, it's my soon-to-be or my already former spouse who's arriving. So when we take that kind of thoughtfulness and intention that you are roommates now, and again, we want to avoid additional conflict. One of my first agreements with a couple is do no more harm. Mm-hmm. Do no more harm. Enough harm has been done. And why would we walk ourselves through a divorce process that costs tens of thousands of dollars and pits us against each other to make the relationship worse? It's my belief, divorce is not a weapon. It's a tool. It's a tool of transformation for the family in hopes to make things better. That's why we're doing it. If you want it to get worse, stay in your bad marriage. If you want it to get really bad, hire a couple of the shark lawyers who want to litigate and dare you through the court system. We have other options. And I think a lot of just folks who need to get unmarried, I'm not talking about personality disorders, high conflict abuse situations. That's a different story. But there's a lot of normal neurotics like myself and my former spouse who just needed to get divorced. So thinking about that progression of the residential schedule, nesting might be a part of it, but I would think thoroughly about what you want that to look like.
I'm Dr. Sarah Adams, and I'd love to hear from you. If you've ever found yourself wondering, is my child on track for their age? Or why aren't they talking or walking yet? You're not alone. Send me questions that's challenging you the most. You can leave a comment on YouTube or email me directly at growingupwithdr.sarah@gmail.com. I'll read your questions and my answers in an upcoming episode. And thank you so much for explaining that so explicitly for our audience and what works well about it and what they could anticipate too. I hadn't thought about that when I was looking into it myself, about what can you expect when you've been gone for 3, 4, maybe even a week. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea that you had about having a roommate agreement. Made me think of Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory.
Oh, yeah. And it can work short term. I know some couples who've done it long term. And, you know, 1 or 2 years, but again, it means either the family the parents are sharing the family home. I know one family where then they got a 2-bedroom apartment. That was the parent place where they each had a bedroom that they could lock, but then they're only renting one other apartment. And you have to keep in mind the financial implication of having 3 homes potentially. Some families can do that. And they get along well. Again, if we don't do damage through the divorce process, you can continue to have a shared space. And what a luxury for children to get to stay. But I know parents that when I'm consulting and they're doing this cohabitation or nesting schedule in the interim, they're like, I have to pick up all my stuff and remember what I need for the week. And I'm like, you're now doing what you're about to ask your children to do upwards of a decade sometimes. And being thoughtful about how our children move between their homes, how we as parents help their success so they have what they need when they need it.
Sounds like a great example of modeling. And you've already brought up so much advice about how divorce impacts our kids. I'd love to hear some more practical tips that help parents succeed in not putting their kids in the middle.
That's an endless conversation, Dr. Sarah, and you know how important it is. I'll maybe just tell a little story on myself. And my daughter was probably 12 years old. We had been divorced probably 5, 6 years at that time, well, maybe 7. But she was older, more independent. We were out on a dog walk together, and she was telling me about a big project that she had to work on over the weekend. And I just start, you know, ranting as one does, and half in my own mind, but out loud, like, I don't know why you couldn't have gotten those supplies with Dad over the weekend. You've known about this for a week. I wish he would just do what's being asked by the teachers when, right? Very subtle. You. My own frustration. She stopped in her tracks and she said, Mom, I just don't like it when you're ranting about Dad. And I just wish that you would stop it. That sounds like a conversation the two of you should be having.
Wow, what a big girl.
Very, but early on, this is the hack. Well, let me finish the story first. So I stopped and I said, you're absolutely right, Sophia. You don't need that information. I'm frustrated. I'll talk to Dad about it. But I don't know why he can't just look at the calendar from the and I started up again. And she said, you're doing it again. I'm like, you're right. And I'm probably not going to be perfect at this, Sophia. It's likely this is going to come up again. And I give you permission to stop me. So early on, I coach my parents, give your kids language, because I wasn't setting out to berate her father, right? It's a subtle thing about homework. It's not his character, his value, what a terrible, he's a wonderful father and a beautiful human. And I love him as the father to our children, our shared children. We have a forever relationship. Our DNA is entangled. Graduation to grandbabies and everything in between. Let's hope we can sit together and celebrate our kids at all those special moments.
Yes.
Which we have done. So giving your children some autonomy and power to say, if when that's happening, you can just stop us. And our kids will. They're like, you know, and again, settlement, like, hey, is Dad going on that trip this weekend? And I'm what is he leaving Friday, Sunday? Like, sounds like a question you should ask Dad. Because we never want our children to be the reporter, the investigator, right? They're not the go-between in terms of information. We still have to be the co-parents who are in conversation. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that we make is we stay too long. So many people just stay too long in a crumbling marriage and do so much harm on the way out the door. If we can see the off-ramp and recognize it and try to find an elegant exit, then the relationship stays intact enough to preserve the co-parent relationship so I can have conversations with their dad about schedules and back to school shopping and homework projects. Sometimes I find myself coaching post-divorce couples, 2-3 years who are still in high conflict. It's really hard to get them back on track and to repair the wounds, not only through our family law system and sometimes the wounds that divorce lawyers have inflicted by creating enemies between two people who've had a love story and still have a forever relationship. So empower our kids and watch ourselves that we don't put them in the middle of our conversations.
And you brought up such a good point about those that are already divorced. What would you say to somebody who, like I mentioned, is already divorced and really feels like it's too late to fix things?
Well, it's never too late to have a good divorce, truly. And my experience of my divorce might not be the same as my spouse. You're not required to be having the same experience. I would say a couple of things to those folks. One, behavior and emotions are contagious. What are you spreading? I might be met with, you know, adversarial dynamics and mean emails and text messages. How do I choose to respond? I don't have to take the bait. And again, I'm reminded of a moment. Once again, a dog walk. We do a lot of dog walking in my community, but I was walking with a friend who has a master's in social work. And I was in the grief part, those early months and years in recovery, in divorce recovery. And I was just angry and in pain. And I was ranting about the dear father of my children. And my My girlfriend stopped me and she said, Karen, it sounds like you're just taking the poison every day and hoping he dies.
Oh.
Just stop it. Just stop it. And I remind people, the point at which you chose to divorce kind of voids every argument you've had up to that point. That's the solution. We don't have to fight over those things anymore. We don't have to carry that anger. We don't have to live in that story that brought us to divorce, because now we're building a new relationship. We don't go back in time. And when I'm sitting with a couple in the Zoom room and there's those little pokes, well, they've never done breakfast before for the last 3 years. I go, uh-uh, not going to do it. That's not helpful. We're ouch. You know that's an ouch.
Yeah.
And all of us, kind of our job description as parents change when we divorce. Our job description as individuals, we're moving into single parent households. One parent might need to learn how to pack the lunches and where to find the emails from the teachers and, oh, what time do I pick up? And one parent might need to be figuring out, how do I budget every month and where does the money get invested, right? Because when we're in a collaborative relationship, we all have our strength areas and we do different parts of the family business. But now I'm the sole entrepreneur. I'm the solo parent of the family business in my home. So offering grace to each other and patience that there's a learning curve and we will be imperfect. We're not looking for perfect parenting. We're looking for good enough parenting. It's never too late to have a good divorce. You can choose to set the tone of how you want that relationship to look.
If you like today's episode so far and it hits close to home for you, please like and subscribe to the podcast. It just takes one click. Please share it with other parents. And if you have topics you'd like me to discuss here on Growing Up with Dr. Sarah, reach out to us. Leave us a voice message. Instructions are in the description box below. Stick around. We have more on our topic coming up. That's beautifully said. And I want to back up just a little bit and ask for parents, for couples, I'd love to know, when is mediation the right choice versus going through the divorce? Which is better and possible?
So maybe a little clarification. Mediated divorces are a divorce process. I'm a certified mediator. I started doing that work in my career as a business consultant, and I still spend 50% of my time consulting to businesses around human behavior and relationship, leadership development, employee engagement, customer service, how to create a great culture. I take those same skills and I just apply it to the business of the family. It's a beautiful crossover. And to that end, when we are thinking about how we want to move through our divorce, again, step one, don't stay too long. Because when we know our truth long before we speak it, and anyone who says divorce is the easy out, no. Many of us have grappled with this decision for years, not uncommon, for many, many years. And during that time where we're kind of resisting the truth, that's when addictive behavior can start to show up again, because we're numbing the discomfort and pain of our marriage. It's when affairs can begin to happen. And affairs are not always sexual. It might be to the job. It might be to our group of friends. It's to the guys every weekend that I go golfing with. If it's to the girls that I'm at the spa, right? It's anything that's taking our heart and soul and attention away from our primary relationship. And when those things start to happen and the anger is boiling up, it's because there's a pain inside. So again, if we can see the exit ramp, and make the elegant decision that doesn't end in a kitchen argument that's it, I'm divorcing you, right? Or you just suddenly get served out of the blue. But we have a conscious, intentional, heartbreaking conversation. I think we've hit our expiration date. Mm-hmm. Are you thinking the same thing? I know we've hit our, now what, how are we going to do this? And mediation allows couples to design their divorce, not divorce by default. The default of divorce is everyone hires a lawyer, starts with a $5,000 to $8,000 retainer that will probably be run through. Add another, who knows how long it will take. In my process, I work with couples 6 to 9 months. I don't like them to languish in this process. Mm-hmm. Again, more damage is done the longer we stay in the divorce journey. And when we're mediating, it means both of you are at the table in conversation. Both of you are designing the divorce. You get to have these creative ideas. We might bring a certified divorce financial analyst to the table to help guide that division of assets. We might bring a certified divorce lending professional to help us identify what's going to happen with the mortgage. Can someone assume it? What can we afford? Interest rates? Are we selling, right? We might bring a child specialist because we have a child who's really emotionally struggling. But again, if we start even with that conversation with our kiddos, and not just what we're going to say, but when we're going to say it, where we're going to say it, how. We have a script. We know those bullet points. Mom and Dad practice those words with me before they sit down with their kids, because it's one of the most important and difficult conversations. Those are the stepping stones that allow a couple to work with a mediator as a neutral party to help you all make the decisions for your future, so you both walk out, not with everything, because there is a division, but something that feels appropriate, right? That's what we're looking for, that teeter-totter of balance. We don't have one person way up and one person way down. We've got a balance that everybody can afford their new life, that we have access to the kids, and that we don't feel like we got screwed by this person that we loved. That is the greatest betrayal, and it carries a long echo into the future life of the family.
I love what you're doing, and I really want to know what brought you to this work and what keeps you in it. How did you find yourself here?
Well, it started with my own divorce. And even before we had arrived at that decision, I knew my truth. I was doing what I now refer to as packing the psychological parachute, thinking, am I going to have to jump out of this plane? I don't want to jump out of this plane. I can't do this to my kids. I was paralyzed. I was so afraid of divorce. And I've now been invited to write about my story. And that book will be published through Wiley Press in May of 2026.
Nice.
And I talk about that I'd rather die than go through divorce. It's not that the marriage is so bad, but the marriage is not sustainable. But the divorce, I cannot be enemies with the father of my child. And we were in couples counseling, as many of us are, trying to fight for that divorce until one day, in not so many words, but our therapist looked at us and said, I think my work here is done. Hmm. And Michael and I, we went home and we sat on the couch that evening, held each other in sadness that our marriage was going to dissolve. And now how are we going to do that? And we asked that couples counselor, will you keep working with us? Can we come back? She said, well, I don't really do that. I said, we don't know how to talk to our kids. We don't know how to get divorced. We all arrive at this threshold. And all they had to offer was, call a lawyer.
Oh,
lawyers are going to help us get divorced. And it is a legal process. They are not going to help us know how to be a divorced family. And they're not skilled in sort of the softer side of divorce and the emotional component. And God love them. They're doing exactly what they're trained to do in a system built for, right, sometimes battle. Yes. And what we want is to be able to offer a different pathway. Now, that journey for our family was 14 years ago. And we were just kind of sniffing our way through it. Like, well, okay, if we're going to tell the kids, we should probably sit down and talk about it, you and I first. Oh, and maybe we should tell their teachers at school. Oh, maybe we should tell the parents of their best friends, because kids start to think divorce is contagious. We want everyone around them to be prepared. So we put a communication plan together. And then, okay, now one of us is moving out. How are we going to introduce that new house? What kind of schedule? Oh, well, they're young right now. We're going to do maybe 3 days at a time. I can't be away from my babies for a week. By the time we came out of COVID, our kids turned to us and said, can we do 2 week rotations between our houses? We want to be settled. And then our son in his senior year, sister was already off to college. He's like, can I just be at a house for a month so that I can actually pack up my whole computer system that I built, my gaming system, and then it's worth it because we're still asking them. And because we protected and designed our divorce early on, Dad and I can have that conversation. And it isn't a land grab. It's not about a possessive. We're not weaponizing our children.
Thank goodness.
So all of that was happening for us. I was passionate about the topic, but I was still a business consultant. And I just kept doing that work until finally there was someone in an audience of mine who was going through divorce and approached me and said, Karen, I know that you have this good divorce thing happening. Like, what's your secret sauce? Would you guide my wife and I? And that was before I knew about divorce coaching. It was before I knew that we could do something different. And God loved that family. They let me kind of experiment with them. And ultimately, I built the business that I was looking for myself 14 years ago. And I think if other people knew that good divorce, like just putting those two words together was an option, we would pick that lane. And I'm not alone, Sarah. There is a pioneering movement right now. I'm referring to us as the Great Disruptors. And we are here to disrupt divorce as we know it and stop weaponizing it and teach families how to leverage it as a tool to improve the co-parent relationship, not make it worse, and to create an environment where your kids have the love they need and the stability and they still thrive. It is absolutely a possibility.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that story. And one of the things that I pulled out from that story is you described the adjustment to divorce as being resingled. And yeah, many folks are not sure how to cook for one or decorate their new space or spend that alone time. And I would love to hear how you give or what tips you give on how to navigate that transition.
Oh, I'm just delighted you're asking this question. You're so insightful. And we really neglect divorced families in our society. We underestimate the grief they're going through and these little micro adjustments. So here's a couple things that I ran into. One, on day of transition, you better make sure you've got a plan that when you say goodbye to your kids, you're going to go play tennis, you're going on a hike, you're meeting a friend, you're dashing out of town. Sitting in that house, like the silence can be deafening and the sadness. So make yourself a plan as soon as that first transition day. And you might need to do this for a while. Now, some of us go through what I refer to as the divorgasmic era. Mm. And it's like, I have all of this free time. What am I going to do with it? And that might be an afterglow that then also kind of has a hangover when the reality starts to settle in. So having a plan for yourself on those transition days. The other is start finding hobbies again and making plans during your solo time. I held back for a long time because I had such divorce guilt. I'm like, I can't go on a trip. What if my kids need me even though they're at their other home? And I can't go have fun. I got over that. And I've embraced my solo time. The other thing that happens is the shift between I feel so lonely and I'm alone. And I felt a lot of loneliness. And it comes up in these little surprising moments I refer to as the phantom pain of divorce. Hmm. And it first struck me one day. I'm on my dog walk. I'm going through a park. And there's an intact family, mom and dad pushing kids on the swing. They're having a beautiful picnic. They're holding their... And seeing that family is when I felt the absence of my own. Now, I'm not an amputee, which is where we usually think about phantom pain. Like something is gone, but I can still feel it. And this falls into the world of ambiguous loss, which can be applied to, you know, people who are lost at war, POWs, or adoption, giving a child up for adoption, someone who has maybe been lost in an accident and the body never recovered. Like, we don't quite have closure. So divorce is this ambiguous loss, which is part of why the restructuring to re-singlehood, I'm grieving the death of my family, my marriage, my identity as a partner, my full-time responsibility as a parent. Like, there is so many layers of death going on, but he's still there. He's still in my world. So the tension between those two things, and then the feeling of it. And I would still have families invite me to barbecues and gatherings, but I realized if my children weren't with me on that day and I was going to a party where everyone else had their kids, too painful. I said no to those invitations. I started to hang out with a lot of friends who were retired and didn't have children.
Well, that's very interesting how you found what worked for you. And I think that that's what people need to remember. And a very key point is really finding what works best for you and, of course, your family as you transition and transform, as you said, into this new relationship. As we start to wrap up, are you seeing new trends in divorces with children that keep everyone emotionally stable and it's an amicable breakup, like conscious uncoupling?
Oh, absolutely. I highly recommend the work of Catherine Woodward Thomas. She's the author of Conscious Uncoupling. Helps us really come to terms with the rupture of the relationship. Mm-hmm. I also recommend an online parenting course called Parent Team. That's the company. And Jennifer and Jen and Brandon, they are the founders. I'm big fans of the work that they do, one through the financial lens, one through the child therapist lens. And the program is called How to Keep Your Children Out of the Middle. And it's a self-guided online videos. My podcast, The Good Divorce Show, is a place where you can hear. I not only bring experts on the show, but I bring families. I bring adult parents who've done this well. And if we can hear them talk about the shared events and laugh together. I also bring adult children of divorce on the show, sometimes with their parents, kind of reflecting back. We forget the long shadow of divorce. In general, Dr. Sarah, what I would say again is that there is a pioneering movement of professionals who are trying to disrupt what we believe about divorce and the approach that we've had it. And in doing so, when we preserve the parenting relationship, again, your marriage is ending, not your relationship. We're transforming and renovating the relationship. So how do we preserve it? And I think that paradigm shift is giving an opportunity and a better experience for children who do find themselves in a family that lives across two homes.
Karen McNenny, the Good Divorce Coach, thank you for this conversation and for reminding us that endings don't have to be ugly and that ultimately happier parents mean happier children.
You got it.
If you're inspired by this conversation, which I know I am, share this episode. Someone you know might need it. Until next time, I'm Dr. Sarah Adams, and let's grow up together.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.